All right, everyone. Hello and welcome to the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid. You also might be listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Matthew Friedman from the Action Network today. We are going to run through some NFL draft chat, kind of our hopes, our dreams, our wishes. Just going to see what happens with this NFL draft. Maybe we'll talk some prop bets as well. But Matt, I mean, world right now, this is what we got. We have the NFL draft, NFL free agency, and let me tell you this, I feel so truly blessed to have it. I really do, because the NFL draft, it is a life preserve. It is something out there for all of us, and I just you love to see it. So is that, do you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, it's our time of year anyway. Like, we really love the NFL draft, so it's not as if it's like full-blown esports for us, where it's like everyone who was into esports like for 5 years, like now they're finally having their day. But it's something kind of like that for us. This is a fantastic time of year.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I mean, no shade thrown at esports, right? Like I'm on board with Korean League of Legends DFS. So no shade thrown from my direction. I will also say we're very lucky in the sense that this is an awesome draft. We have stud quarterbacks, right? We have Joe Burrow. We have Tua. We even have, you know, some people are into Justin Herbert. Some people are into Jordan Love. We have stud wide receivers. We have some incredible defensive players in this draft. I mean, it's not going to surprise me if Jeff Okuda ends up being, you know, the best shutdown corner in the NFL in like 18 months. Like the things that scouts say about him, the things that other wide receivers say about him are just wild. So where are you at with Mr. Okuda and this whole draft, really? Are you excited? Are you loving this draft?
Yeah, I think it's a great draft. You know, Okuda has a strong chance to be the number three guy off of the board. And, you know, if he doesn't go there, he should go, you know, I think in the top five, top seven. He, you know, deserves, you know, to be in that range. One thing that's great about this draft is that not only is there a number of like high quality guys, like they all have sort of different, they're different molds, you know. So like we have a high quality edge rusher in Chase Young. We have a great shutdown corner, at least potential shutdown corner in Okuda. We have that sort of hybrid safety linebacker in Isaiah Simmons. Like there are a number of kind of cool guys in this class. And then, you know, like you can never have too many strong offensive tackles. And like this is a really strong class for offensive tackles. So love to see that. You know, we could see a number of those guys go in the top 10. And then the wide receivers, you know, people are talking about this like it might be the greatest prospect wide receiver class of all time. You know, 2014 for me is still, I think, a cut above this class, but this has a lot of depth. So you could get a lot of guys going in round two, round three, who offer value for the next half decade in the NFL.
All right. So I want to have this conversation with you, because much like yourself, we learned about the game of football, not by playing it, not by grinding the tape, but we learned to understand the game of professional football through spreadsheets. And that sounds kind of glib, but it's true. Like that's kind of the way that I think about things. I mean, yeah. I watched football certainly before I started writing RotoViz articles and stuff. And so I get some of the old ways of thinking about the game, but as a numbers based guy, are you worried at all about Joseph Burrow's age? So to give people an idea, Joe Burrow is, I believe, going to be the oldest prospect who has ever been drafted at quarterback first overall. Like just the way that that's just kind of the way that the position has gone. Very rarely are you going to find a guy who goes number one overall who was a graduate transfer, right? Like it's just in generally, it's not the way that the position is going to work. Like people, I mean, you're what's very funny is you will hear people say that as a negative about Jalen Hurts. They'll be like, oh, well, he transferred from Alabama, so that's clearly a negative. But no one wants to talk about the fact that Joseph Burrow couldn't beat out JT Barrett as the quarterback at Ohio State, you know. So are you at all worried, concerned about the Joe Burrow age stuff?
No, I'm not really. You know, he was, you know, a four-star recruit entering college. I mean, here's another way to think about it. Carson Palmer was the last guy that the Bengals drafted number one overall, you know, a decade and a half ago. He was 24 years old when they took him number one. You know,
interesting. Okay.
You know, so it's not a situation where if a guy is older, he's necessarily disqualified. It's just that you do see some of those guys who are 21. You know, think about Lamar Jackson when he was entering the league as a 21-year-old. Those guys who are 21, they tend to be a cut above. But, you know, once you get to a quarterback who's 22, 23, 24, it's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I think that is probably true. Like there is, there's at a certain point where you're like, there's not a difference between X age and Y age. It's just that if you are under X age, then it's a big positive.
Exactly.
I can totally buy that. And I am not. Okay. Maybe I'm like 1% worried about Joseph Burrow. Maybe I am like 1% worried that, maybe he, like, first of all, he was playing with three NFL wide receivers and an NFL tight end and an NFL running back. We have seen that. Right. We have seen that impact quarterback prospects in the past where they look amazing because they're playing with all these future NFL players. His coordinator got immediately promoted to the NFL after the season, right? Like they were like, okay, this guy, you are one of the 32 best play callers in the world. So basically every contextual factor, like it's kind of like reverse Daniel Jones, right? Daniel Jones played, I guess he had the Sutcliffe guy who people think is a good quarterback coach, but he had no NFL teammates. He had no help and people were willing to forgive his poor play in college due to those contextual factors. On the other hand, we have Joe Burrow who had every contextual factor was in his favor. So I will say I am 1% worried that Joe Burrow might be a smidge overrated. I don't think he's a bust. I don't think it's a reason for him to not go number one overall, but maybe I have a little bit of reservations.
Okay. I think all of that is fair. And I would say if I have worries about Burrow, it has nothing to do with his age. It does have to do with the fact that he is, you know, something of a one-year wonder. As you mentioned, he did have all of those benefits that almost no one else in college football had last year or really has ever had. But here's a way of thinking about it. If Burrow had all of those things going for him and he had thrown, let's say instead of 60 touchdowns, he had thrown only 48 touchdowns, would he still be the number one pick? Like, I think he probably would be, you know?
Yeah, that's
so, like,
true.
So he's still, you know, gone though? Even above like the threshold of what he would have needed to do to be the number one pick.
Okay, so let's say the 48 touchdowns happen, and let's say he doesn't have that just absurd game against OU. It's just like 350 yards, four touchdowns against OU instead of 700 yards and seven touchdowns, right? Like he has an okay game. And let's say Tua doesn't get hurt, right?
Yeah.
And Alabama also makes the playoffs. They make it, you know, over Oklahoma or whatever as a one-loss SEC team. Mm-hmm. I think certainly in that scenario, there would be an argument. No, you're not going to find any serious football analysts right now arguing that Tua should go ahead. I think that there is certainly a very real scenario where Tua would be going over Burrow had he not been injured. I also think there is still, as it exists now, I don't think it's impossible that Tua ends up being a better NFL player than Joseph Burrow. Like that's, to me, I think is in the range of outcomes because, you know, what's weird is something the XFL really showed us was, you know what really matters playing the quarterback position right now? Just like not getting sacked, just like being able to avoid that first wave of pressure. And not that Joe Burrow is some like Brock Osweiler stationary level quarterback. Like he can move a little bit. He's got the hip swivel. I don't think they call it that with quarterbacks. They call it something different. But Tua is like legitimately mobile. Like legitimately you can run quarterback draws with him. You can run a little bit of quarterback power. And I think that element is so valuable the way the NFL is going that it would not surprise me at all if Tua has a better career than Joe Burrow.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I almost don't even try to project how these guys are going to do in the NFL at quarterback. Cause I know that I don't know. No. And it's so contextualized based on, basically the players around them and the coaching staff. Like that means so much for these guys and their future.
Yeah. And Zach Taylor had a horrible first year coaching the Cincinnati Bengals, really, really bad roster. Right. So I know that his hire was big time Cocoon, right? Like he was like, he's like married to an owner's daughter and he's like, he just, so he's gotten these jobs on no merit of his own, right? Like he like Zach Taylor is just a guy, but he has learned from guys who have coached successful passing NFL offenses. And at the beginning of the season, before Andy Dalton got benched, they were running like one of the most situation neutral pass heavy offenses in the NFL. So like Burrow, I don't think is going, and there are good players on the Bengals roster, AJ Green, John Ross, Tyler Boyd, Tyler Eifert, Joe Mixon. That's a good, that is an above average personnel grouping at pass catcher, I think.
Yeah, honestly, one of the most underappreciated wide receiver units in the league now that AJ Green is back. I mean, it all depends on what AJ Green looks like, but if he's, you know, let's say like 90% of what he used to be, that's actually a pretty good unit.
And if they go full Cliff Kingsbury and draft like three wide receivers and sign UDF, like Cliff was like, okay, I got Kyler, I'm drafting everyone. I'm signing guys. Like I'm trading picks to get DeAndre Hopkins. Like they are all in on him. And like you would like to think like, okay, we're drafting this guy number one overall. Like let's go all in on him. But that, because they're the Bengals, I you know, who knows? Who knows what they do?
Yeah, yeah, you never know. But, I mean, hey, this is a class, as we mentioned, deep at the wide receiver position. You know, they've got picks on day two. They could end up getting some guys there, you know, tight end, wide receiver, whatever, who could end up being pretty good weapons long-term for Burrow.
Yeah, I think that is definitely true. So, you know, as long as we're talking about the quarterbacks here, let's run through some of the other guys who might go in the first round. Where are you at on Justin Herbert? I'll not poison this conversation with my influence. What do you think of Justin Herbert?
You know, I think if it were any other year, like he feels sort of Goff-esque to me. I think if it were any other year, and, you know, we didn't have a Burrow, we didn't have a Tua, people would talk about Herbert as a perfectly acceptable number one overall pick. I mean, and people, it would be like, okay, that's fine.
People did a year ago. They were like, Justin Herbert's going to go number one overall. I remember Giants fans being upset that Justin Herbert decided to go back to school because they wanted them to select. They wanted the Giants to select Justin Herbert.
Yeah. I mean, he has, you know, 4 years of starting experience. You know, people talk about the cannon of an arm, a better athlete than I think anyone expected him to be at the combine. I don't honestly see what there is to dislike about him. But again, at the same time, it all comes down to how quickly a guy can pick up the NFL offense and the team that he lands with. And all of that is just so unknown. But I, as a prospect, I honestly don't see anything wrong with Herbert.
Yeah, I don't really like Herbert. Like, if my team, like, if I was one of these teams that's rumored to be drafting him, you know, like the Colts or the Chargers, I would be out on that. I would not be interested. And that is not really a database take, because you look at what he did in college: 95 touchdowns, 23 interceptions, 153 college quarterback rating. So that formula works a little bit different than the NFL rating. 8.2 YPA was good really every year that he was in college. His teams won a lot of games. You know, he did not play with a ton of NFL players. Like, it's not like he was not out there playing with Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, right? Like, Oregon wide receivers, they just recruit a different style of player overall. It's just kind of like their organization, kind of like the Seahawks. They have a type, like Oregon has a type of player that they recruit. I just got to say, he's just one of those guys that, like, I don't get it. Right? Like, I look at him and I just see like a pretty average player. And there also is this thing that we used to do at RotoViz where we would look at how these guys performed against like the stiffest levels of competition, like where they would get their numbers. And you look at Herbert in games against Stanford, against Utah, you look at him in the bowl games and his it's like a trend line of like how the stock market goes, just like down 20% whenever he would go against one of these really tough defenses. And that has me a little worried as well.
He feels very Kirk Cousins-esque to me.
Super Kirk Cousins-y. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like there's some talent there, and he's, you know, if you have other players around him, he's probably good enough, but I don't think he's like a true difference-making quarterback.
Yeah. I think that's a fair representation of what he is. Yeah.
You know, one thing that is interesting about him though, because he is in this class, he changes the dynamic, and I think changes the urgency that teams might have in addressing the quarterback position. So, you know, if it were just Burrow at the top and then Tua, we might see more teams anxious to trade up to number three to try to get Tua. But now, because teams, if they like Herbert enough, they might just say, okay, if another team jumps us to get Tua, that's fine. Herbert will fall to us. So him as a third quarterback in the class, I think, makes it a little more interesting from a draft perspective.
Yeah, I think that that is probably true. Last guy who I think is plausible to go in the first round. Well, there are a couple guys. I'm noted on record as being a Jalen Hurts guy, but before we talk about Hurts, let's just Jordan Love, right? Jordan Love, weird prospect in terms of like Stone Cold sucked his last year at Utah State. Where are we at with him?
I can't do it, but I say that each year. And there's a guy each year I think doesn't deserve to be a first rounder, and he goes in the top 10. You know, like Josh Allen 2 years ago, and then Daniel Jones last year. I think that's going to be Jordan Love this year. If he makes it into the first round, I won't think he probably deserves to be there. But the sentiment is, if you kind of survey a lot of the expert mock drafts out there, they think he's going to be a first rounder. So I don't see it, but I've been wrong in the past about guys like him.
His over under on the FanDuel Sportsbook, I think, is like 16.5. I don't have it up. I don't have it up right now, but I mean that's wild. Like, for a guy who was like legitimately an average player at Utah State to be going in the first round, it's like, I guess it does just show that at quarterback, all it takes is one team to look at you and think you have the tools. Like, they see the mobility, they see the strong arm, and like, they're like, okay, well, we can teach him to make decisions or whatever, which is such a weird way for teams to think about stuff. Like, why would you, like, I don't know. I would always rather have, you know, like the stud offensive tackle, the edge rusher, the cornerback. And because right now, this is so weird, but this is the first time, Matt, in NFL history, we have a surplus of starting NFL quarterbacks.
Yes. And that is part of why I look at Jordan Love, and I don't think he should be a first rounder. But yeah, you're right. If we look at DraftKings, 17.5 is his line there. I believe it's 18.5 at FanDuel. But yeah, I mean, he's, or 14.5 actually at FanDuel. Like, he's slated right for the middle of the first round. I don't get it, but you know, I just have to have the humility to know I'm probably wrong. So I think four quarterbacks go in round one, and I don't see it. But I think he's one of those guys.
I don't see it either, but it definitely is one of those things that seems like it's going to happen. I think that instead of Jalen Hurts, or instead of Justin Herbert, instead of Jordan Love, I think that if I was an NFL GM, Jalen Hurts would be the quarterback that I was like, I want to turn my franchise around. I want to do what the Ravens did. I want to do what the Chiefs did. I want to draft a rookie quarterback and immediately be able to contend for the division, immediately be able to contend for championships. Jalen Hurts would be my guy. And it's not because I think that he is Mahomes as a passer, or even that I think that he is Lamar as a rusher, but I think that he is an accurate enough passer, a good enough decision maker, and his running style is not like Lamar. He's actually more of a Cam Newton-style rusher, in the sense of you'd run a lot of QB power with him. You'd use him on the goal line a ton. I think that Jalen Hurts is an NFL quarterback, and his over-under, we actually talked about this on the last episode of this show, his over-under on the FanDuel Sportsbook is 75.5 for where he is drafted, and we have the under on that number booked here on the Daily Roto Hour. I think it's more likely he goes in the first round than the third round.
I don't see the first round, but I like him. I don't see the first round, but that doesn't mean I'm not enthusiastic about him. Right. We are both Cowboys fans, so when I say Dak, like, that's a compliment. And
yeah, very similar to Dak. That's actually a good compare. Probably a little bit more of a runner and a little bit less accurate of a deep thrower, but very similar.
Yeah. But, you know, historically, guys like this, the NFL has pushed into the third round, the fourth round. I'm thinking of someone like, you know, Russell Wilson, like guys who weren't like perfect prospects who went later than they should have. So Russell Wilson in the third round, Dak in the fourth round. I think the NFL is evolving. And so now we see someone like Jalen Hurts go in the second round. And I like him a lot. I think he has, you know, the from a fantasy perspective, obviously he has that dual threat capability that we just love. And from a real life quarterback perspective, I do think he's better than a lot of the scouts would appreciate just because of what he can do.
Yeah, I think that that is 100% factual. And I think that it's so interesting to me that the NFL has changed to the point where, like, you know, if Jalen Hurts 10 years ago, he might not have even been drafted, right? He legitimately would have maybe been like an undrafted free agent, like a very, this is not one-to-one because Pryor was faster, but I think like comparing a college quarterback like Terrell Pryor, who was really, really good as a runner, actually, and I mean, Hurts is a way better passer than Pryor, but like Pryor was like never seriously treated as a quarterback option and had to change positions. Like Hurt, like there's not going to be any conversation about Hurts changing positions, right? Like he's a quarterback.
Yeah. Like 20 years ago, he would have had to move to safety or something like that.
Yeah. Which is, you know, what's funny is actually the last this is a good trivia question. The last quarterback to be asked to do different positional drills at the NFL combine, do you know which quarterback it was?
I'm going to assume it's Lamar Jackson.
No, that's why it's funny. It's Trace McSorley, who's his backup as Ravens.
That's funny.
He was asked to do safety drills and tight end drills at the combine, which I just thought was really funny. Okay, some of these other guys that are being like, they're not mocked in the first round often, but like if you go to Grinding the Mocks, which if you guys have not used that site, it's a really cool site that just sort of averages up mock drafts from around. It's actually very useful for I'm in a dynasty league that does our rookie draft before the NFL draft. It's like a really cool wrinkle of like trying to bet not only on talent of guys, but where you think they're going to go. And I think that one of Jake Fromm or Jacob Eason, as he prefers to be known as, I think one of them goes way before they should, like back end of the first round, like cut the Drew Lock pick. Like, I think that those guys are no different to me than Drew Lock, and some team will be like, I want that guy.
Okay, so Drew Lock, and he's an interesting guy to talk about because, like, there occasionally happens where there's a guy everyone thinks should be in the first round, and he falls to the second round. So that was Drew Lock last year. Think of Geno Smith years ago. We thought he would be a first rounder, fell to round two. I don't know. And so kind of thinking about that, one, that guy this year could be Justin Herbert. Like, that legitimately has a chance to happen.
Everyone's like, he goes top 10, and then he just falls. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't even be surprising if someone, like, I don't agree with this, but would not be super surprising to me if Jordan Love went ahead.
Yeah, that could happen. But thinking about Fromm or Eason, I just don't see one of those guys sneaking into the back half of round one. But I could be wrong. I would be surprised. If that happens, I think we actually get five quarterbacks in this draft, and that rarely happens. And I don't really even why that should happen this year when, as you said, there are so many quarterbacks out there in the NFL already. Like, if Cam Newton can't get a job and Jameis Winston can't get a job, what is the NFL doing drafting five quarterbacks in the first round?
Well, maybe the reason that they can't get a job is because these teams are they're
bullish.
Saying,
yeah.
Well, they're saying, why do I want to pay a 30-year-old quarterback, or why do I want to try and rebuild around a guy whose health is sketchy? Or it's sort of a devil you don't know versus the devil you do know. Like, you're not going to be surprised by what you get well, NFL teams think that they know what Jameis Winston is. I think Winston has a lot more upside than he showed in Tampa Bay, but I imagine that would be the argument for why those guys would go unsigned. But there would maybe be some upside. There would maybe be some upside in terms of the rookies that are going to be drafted. Okay, some of these other later round guys. What do you think of Anthony Gordon?
I mean, what's not to like? I don't know. I mean, I probably have too much affinity for these Washington State guys
Same.
So, you know, yeah, I think he's a perfectly fine option to be this year's Gardner Minshew.
The thing though is that affinity for Washington State quarterbacks did finally pay off for me, because in these super flex dynasty drafts or these super flex dynasty leagues that I'm in, that like the Washington State quarterback is always left there in the fourth round. Like, no one's taking Gardner Minshew. Yeah. No one's taking Anthony Gordon. Now, granted, it's gonna leave you with some guys like Luke Falk and some dudes like that that are just, you know, they're not any good and they never do anything for you. But I think there is a big benefit in getting some guys like that. So let's go through some of these other later round guys and see if we think, you know, any of them, like, do we think that even Steven Montez, do we think that he is an NFL backup, or are we off him?
No, there's literally no one else after like Fromm and Eason and maybe Anthony Gordon that I'm really all that interested in.
I'm bummed out that Khalil Tate did not run or do anything at the combine. I kind of thought that he was an example of like the Tyrod Taylor, Tyree Jackson sort of developmental backup guy and I think that. Also, one of my overarching philosophies is that every team should have a running quarterback on their roster. It's not like these guys exist in college at every level, right? Like they're just are, and some of them are so much better than the others, right? Like Jalen Hurts is a universe better than Khalil Tate. But I can't come up with a compelling argument why, you know, a team would prefer Shea Patterson or Brian Lewerke as their third string quarterback instead of Khalil Tate. Tyree Jackson, like Tyree Jackson wasn't even a starter in the XFL, whereas like for me, he would be on an NFL roster, I think, if I was making those decisions.
Yeah, I think there's a question of, I think coaches maybe fall into this trap or like the fallacy of thinking that they can plug in their backup quarterback and he can do exactly what their starter can do in the same offense. And that's just not going to happen. So if you have to go to the backup, you might as well have it be a guy who's a little more volatile and, you know, explosive. You maybe have to change some things in your offense, but he actually gives you a better chance of winning than if you just went with a, you know, run of the mill below average backup.
Yeah, if you went with like a facsimile version of like you're the Saints and you have, they had Luke Falk actually, or no, they had the other Washington State quarterback.
Sean Mannion?
No, maybe it was Luke Falk. They had some Washington State quarterback on their roster for a long time. And I can't remember if it was Connor Holiday, I believe. So like that's just like a 35th percentile version of Drew Brees. Like you're not winning games doing right. That. You're much more likely to win games with, you know, running quarterback X coming in there and giving you a little bit more of a dynamic look. So that's kind of it for the quarterbacks. I want to talk now about something near and dear to our hearts, which is the Dallas Football Cowboys. What do we want them to do in the draft, and what are they most likely to do in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, I want them to go on defense. I think they have some weaknesses there. They lost Byron Jones. Given that they re-signed Amari Cooper, I feel that they're pretty set on offense. It really hurts that Travis Frederick, their center, retired, but, you know, he had health issues. I understand it. But, I mean, they're not going to address the center position in the first round anyway. Maybe they can find a guy on day two who can help them there. But, yeah, I want them to get better on defense because I think their offense is pretty set at this point.
Yeah, I think their offense is pretty set. I will say I would not be mad if CeeDee Lamb found his way to be a Dallas Cowboy. Just like thinking of the 12 personnel or like the three wide receivers being Gallup, Cooper, and Lamb. Like,
yeah.
That they're going to score a lot of points on offense if that is there. And you know what? As of today, which is March 26th, there were reports that after franchise tagging Dak, you know, just to keep him in the fold, that they are working on a 4-year contract extension with him. What better way to invest in a 4-year contract? Which to be honest, I think that giving Dak $35 million a year is below market value for him. Like, I think that is a pretty real value. Now, granted, I love Dak Prescott and probably like Dak Prescott more than Jerry Jones likes Dak Prescott. So whatever. But what better way to invest in your young quarterback than to give him CeeDee Lamb?
Yeah. You know what? I get the idea of CeeDee Lamb there. I think he will be gone. I think Jerry Jeudy will be gone. And I think Henry Ruggs will probably be gone by the time the Cowboys pick. And by the way, we should talk about Ruggs later.
Yeah, let's,
he's interesting.
We can talk about Ruggs right now.
Yeah, but I think all three of those guys will be gone. I like the idea of trying to make your three wide receiver set as robust as possible. One thing they potentially could do This is a little outside the box. Instead of going with the wide receiver in the first round, like, give Tony Pollard some more snaps in the slot. Like, he's a really good receiver.
I think that Pollard is going to get 60 targets probably in 2020.
I like that. That would be awesome. But let's talk about Ruggs. What do you think there?
So I started out being one of the Ruggs should be a first round dynasty rookie pick people. And then I had a conversation with our buddy, JJ Zacharyson, late round quarterback from numberfire.com. And he made to me what I thought was just a very intelligent point, as JJ often does, which is the reason that he's going to go in the first round is probably not directly related to how many passes he's going to catch and how many touchdowns he's going to score. It's related to the fact that when that guy's on the field, you got to put a safety over the top. You can't just be giving up 80-yard free touchdown passes. So it changes the space on the field. And that result is very similar to the role that DeSean Jackson played in his career, which was when DeSean Jackson is on the field, his quarterbacks have always had a better YPA than when he was not on the field. That was true in Washington. That was true in Tampa Bay. That was true in Philadelphia. But when were you ever fist pumping owning DeSean Jackson in fantasy? Like the Vic year. That was the one time. But it's not like DeSean Jackson was never, like, was he ever a first round fantasy pick? I don't think so.
No, I don't think he was. But at the same time, DeSean Jackson did have 7 seasons in which he had over 1,000 yards from scrimmage. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot. And he was, so DeSean Jackson had like fantastic longevity, which is not something that you expect from his archetype of player. But he also never scored double-digit touchdowns. And he was also like a super frustrated, like, you can say whatever you want. He was a very frustrating player to own in fantasy. Like, he had the Lee Evans syndrome where, like, you never knew when to start him or sit him.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't want to, like fact check you too much. He did have 1 year of 10 touchdowns, but it's not as if that really matters all that much. But, you know, he opened his career.
I need to point out it was a rushing touchdown.
Correct. So it was a rushing touchdown. It counts. Like, you know, even though he missed some games early in his career, he still opened his career, you know, in his first 7 seasons, he averaged almost 1,100 yards per season. You know, like he was a guy who definitely deserved, when he entered the league, to be drafted in the first round of rookie drafts. And now, granted, he was productive in college in a way that Ruggs never was. And yeah. I do get JJ's point absolutely about there's a very real chance that what Ruggs adds is more of a real football impact as opposed to a fantasy football impact. But he does have the ability to be someone like Marquise Brown, or I don't want to say like Tyreek Hill because that's just the outlier. But we are looking at a guy who was a 5-star recruit entering college, tore up the combine, is 21 years old as a rookie. Like, yeah, he should be a first rounder in dynasty drafts. Like, whatever you thought of Mecole Hardman last year, like, I think
Ruggs,
that's roughly
the same thing.
That's roughly what you should think of Ruggs this year, except like Ruggs actually did have much more production. You know, like, he had 20 touchdowns.
Well,
like,
okay, so let me make a point there, which is that if Mecole Hardman had been drafted by literally probably any other team than the Chiefs, I would have not been interested in him at all. Right. Yeah. But just for the fact that, like, and you could see the vision for what Mecole Hardman was going to be for the Chiefs. You knew exactly what they wanted him to do. They wanted him to be fast. They wanted him to create space. So I think the Ruggs and Hardman are very similar comps in the sense that I think landing spot is going to have a huge impact on Ruggs' career. You know, if the mock that everyone started the offseason with was everyone mocked Ruggs to the Philadelphia Eagles at 21. Now it seems like he's probably not even going to get there at 21, which is like, it's very funny how these things happen. And like, there's somehow momentum for something that hasn't happened. Like, the draft has not happened. It's not like there's had time for the momentum to change. It's just been the drumbeat for Ruggs has gotten louder and louder. I like him. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. My position as of now is super landing spot dependent. If he goes to a bad landing spot, it's definitely going to be someone that I am more likely to fade than not. Do you believe the fact that his name looks cool written out with the three behind it has anything to do with why people like him so much? I do. I believe that stuff like that material impacts how people think of prospects. Not a joke.
Well, it's like Ronald Jones, who looks cool with the hair, yep. So and number 25. But yeah, I don't think about that too much. For me, it's just sort of like the numbers in the spreadsheet. But I don't know. You mentioned an interesting thing with Ruggs that I want to circle back on. The idea that he's super landing spot dependent, and how part of the value in Mecole Hardman last year was where he landed. And so on the one hand, I do think that's accurate. On the other hand, I think they are super similar outside of anything to do with the landing spot, just in terms of their prospect profiles. Like, neither one really had a breakout season. You know, similar size, similar athletic profile, both 21 years old as rookies, both five-star recruits going to top schools. I think the landing spot thing, it's something that's easy to focus on, but I think people are going to overvalue it one way or another, because landing spot stuff can change so quickly. You know what I mean? I think people actually overvalue a lot of what a landing spot means when it comes time to draft these rookies and their dynasty drafts, because like that changes so much.
It does, but like being drafted to the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes being 24 years old, like that is if you were going to rank landing spots for a wide receiver 1 through 32, that would be first place, and it would be first place by two standard deviations. Like the other great landing spots for wide receivers, you'd be like, oh, Breeze is close to retirement, Brady is close to retirement. Like you'd look at all these great offenses and you'd be like, you'd be able to nitpick. I mean, the only threat with McColl's landing spot would be Mahomes retiring, or I guess maybe Andy Reid retiring and them hiring an idiot coach. I guess that could have, like, it seems unlikely, but it's certain, like, that is kind of, we're talking about tail risks anyways. That would be one.
I mean, I guess here's one way to think about it. Like, N'Keal Harry last year, I thought he was a good pick in the top three of fantasy drafts, but it had really nothing to do with the fact that he was drafted to the Patriots or he would be playing with Tom Brady. And like, we see guys, think about it last year also with A.J. Brown. You know, people were too down on him relative to his talent and what he had done in college and his overall draft profile and the fact that he was a second rounder. They were too down on him because of where he landed. You know, because, oh, he's behind Corey Davis on the depth chart and he has Marcus Mariota throwing to him. Like, there are a lot of circumstances that can just change really quickly. And even if a guy is in a bad situation, doesn't have a good offense around him, doesn't have a good quarterback, doesn't have a good offensive coordinator, he could still be elevated pretty quickly to the number one job and then just get a ton of targets. So I honestly try to be pretty agnostic to landing spot and focus on the things that I think are fairly predictive year over year. And, you know, so that to me, that's draft position, that's, you know, college production, and, you know, it's athletic profile, you know, that, and that includes a guy's age, his size, you know, his speed, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think all of that is reasonable as it pertains to Henry Ruggs. I think the situation that I will probably end up with him is that I will, where he is available, I will always end up liking someone a little bit more. And I think the reason for that is that I like Denzel Mims more than him. And I think that they are going to be, I think likely after the draft, those two are going to end up pretty close to back to back to each other in dynasty drafts, in these rookie drafts. And I will just, like, I'll just be taking Denzel Mims because I think he's better and I like him more.
I think that's for, although I would say, I think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm for Ruggs because people who are playing in dynasty leagues, a lot of them, you know, watched him play in college. They know he's explosive. And I still expect Ruggs to be a top three wide receiver. And then all of the guys after that, and we can, you know, talk about him a little bit if you want, but, you know, there's going to be T. Higgins somewhere in there, Justin Jefferson, Laviska Shenault, Denzel Mims is going to mix in there, Brandon Ayuk. Like, I could see there being a little more stratification, a little more separation between Mims and Ruggs. And so I think that might change the way in which you could approach it if you want.
Yeah, I think that is probably pretty reasonable. What do you think of Mims? Do you like him?
Oh, I love him. I love Mims. I think he should be a first rounder. You know, he's not, he's mocked there obviously much more than he was before the draft, but still, you know, infrequently, but I think he has a pretty decent chance to go, let's say, like to Green Bay at number 30.
Love it. Yeah. Love that. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I like Mims a lot.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, obviously I think that that's pretty reasonable, cause I think he is, I think he's awesome. So let's continue talking about, well, actually, wait, what do you think of Jonathan Taylor? Is Jonathan Taylor Saquon, Zeke, CMC level? Like, do you believe that?
Okay. I go back and forth on this right now. I have D'Andre Swift slightly ahead of Jonathan Taylor in my rookie rankings, but I really view them as being very close to each other, a coin flip. What gives Swift the edge is that I feel pretty confident he's the better pass catching back. And I think that means something in the NFL, but I do have to acknowledge that Jonathan Taylor is a fantastic physical specimen. We know he's a good runner based on the production that he had in college, and he improved significantly as a receiver in his final season. So maybe he's a better receiver than people are giving him credit for. And if that is the case, then he is ahead of Swift for me. But it's really a coin flip. I have bet on Swift to be the on Taylor to be the number one back drafted. Yeah, because
the number
is
really good. It's like plus it's like plus 155 when I think it's like much closer to a coin flip.
Yeah, I think it's much closer to a coin flip between those two guys. So yeah, I think there's value there. But in terms of who ends up becoming you know, the better NFL player, I lean Swift just a little bit, but it's very close.
So here is my argument for Jonathan Taylor. Leonard Fournette had like 90 targets in 2019, despite never showing any evidence that he was a good pass catcher at all. I mean, for these guys, it really doesn't matter if they're any good at catching passes. It just matters if the team is going to give it to them. So the argument for Swift would be not that he is a better pass catcher, which I think he probably is. The argument from my perspective instead would be that a team is going to draft Swift with the idea that they're going to pass him the ball. I don't know if a team would draft Jonathan Taylor with the plan to make him a significant portion of their passing game, which is so weird because, like, I go back to teams not even understanding what they're drafting. Josh Jacobs was the only running back to go in the first round last year. What he did good at Alabama was catch passes, and then Oakland drafted him and they were like, all right, Jalen Richard, we're throwing him the ball. We're giving him a contract extension. It's like, what are you even doing? Like, what are we even doing here, Oakland? Why is this happening?
Yeah. And you're right that we kind of have to think about the assumptions that teams have for how they want to use guys when they draft them. I assume that a team looking at Swift, especially if they draft him in the first round, they are thinking that they're getting a three down guy, someone who can contribute in both phases. So I'm maybe a little too optimistic on how good of a receiver he is and how much receiving usage he's going to have in the NFL. But that for me is the difference between Swift and Taylor.
Yeah, which I think, you know, I don't have any problem with that. So let's let's talk about Henry Ruggs' college teammate Jerry Jeudy. Basically, last 3 years, everyone was like, oh, Jerry Jeudy, you know, he's the next X, Y, and Z from Alabama. He's the next Calvin Ridley. He's the next Julio Jones. He's the next Amari Cooper. And he never had one of those Amari Cooper seasons at Alabama. He never was truly, truly dominant at Alabama. And the film people basically say it's not his fault. And, but I mean, he never had a Dominator rating above 33%, which is like kind of that's the benchmark that I think of as elite wide receiver prospect.
Yeah. But I mean, he did win the Biletnikoff in 2018 and not like that.
So did Dede Westbrook.
Well, okay.
And I mean, Dede Westbrook. No, but here's the thing is people, when I say that about Dede Westbrook, people are always like, yeah, well, X, Y, and Z. So it's like, you got to apply it universally.
I'll just continue to make excuses for why Dede Westbrook should be a better receiver same. In the NFL
okay,
than
yeah,
he is.
Same. Okay, so we can agree on that.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I know that the reason that I think, and this is like a very obvious statement, but like for why Jeudy was never more dominant is that, you know, like one, he didn't need to be because they had Henry Ruggs, they had Devontae Smith. Like, you know, they have maybe on that team, like four guys who are going to be selected in the first round of NFL drafts at the wide receiver position. So, you know, he just didn't need to be dominant in a market share perspective, but, you know, he had back to
playing second halves of games. Like there were a lot of games he was just not playing.
Yeah. You know, so they didn't need him to dominate in that way. And, you know, even though they didn't need him to dominate, he still had back-to-back seasons with over 1,000 yards receiving and double digit touchdowns. Like, I mean, what more do we really want out of the guy? Like, as a physical specimen, he's not like a Calvin Johnson type of player, but he's decent enough. And, you know, he was a five-star recruit entering college, and he didn't do anything to show that, like, that rating was wrong in any way. I'm still on board with him. I don't think he goes in the top 10, but I think he does go in the, you know, the top half of round one. And I think he's a perfectly acceptable. You probably don't want to take him ahead of Swift or Taylor, but I think he's a perfectly acceptable number three pick in rookie drafts this year.
I'm taking Lamb ahead of Judy for sure. That is not even a, I think that it was close before the combine, but not now. Like I'm not going to take a 25th percentile spark wide receiver ahead of another guy when it's close to me. It can't be done.
That's fair, but it's not as if, Lamb really tore up the combine either. You know, like I still think of them as like fairly comparable prospects.
Lamb is bigger though. Lamb is like, and
marginally bigger. He's maybe like 5 pounds heavier and an inch taller. Like they're very comparable in their size. And to me,
really goes up and gets it though. He has the my ball mentality.
That's fair. Like, and to me, it doesn't really matter if you prefer Lamb over Judy. I think those are probably the two top receivers who should be going after the top two running backs. It doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I don't think that I have a real problem with that at all. So let's talk about some of these. Let's talk about some of these secondary wide receivers before we get out of here. Just give me thumbs up or thumbs down on some of these guys. Okay, Laviska Shenault, in or out?
I want to like him more than I do. I guess I'll try to put it that way.
I like players of that archetype. It's just hard to analyze guys who likely played their final season injured and then performed injured at the combine. Like that's just a gray area that we, you know, the tools to analyze that are difficult.
I'll just say one quick thing about him. The 40 time doesn't bother me. I know he was slower, but he was also injured. And there are other big bodied guys like Michael Thomas ran a 4.57. It's similar size at the combine. The 40 doesn't bother me.
Same. And I mean, that's the time, like I was not surprised. I didn't think he was going to be very fast at the combine. Yeah. Okay. Jalen Reagor.
I'm not as bullish as a lot of other people. He wasn't as fast as I expected him to be. He has good explosion, but I don't know. I just don't know if he's a complete player.
Okay. KJ Hamler.
No.
Yeah. All the way out. Like I still see him in like the second round and so like, no, I'm out. Like he weighs as much as I do. He like is not an NFL size player. Yeah. All right. Justin Jefferson, 180 pounds soaking wet, but very fast.
Love him. Do you know what his 40 time was when he was a high school recruit? It was a 4.88. He was incredibly slow.
He just got better every year.
Yeah. Love him.
Yeah. I love those dudes who get better every year. Okay. Denzel Mims. I'm in. I'm in for sure.
Fully in. Love him.
Brandon Ayuk. I am very lukewarm on it. I like him way less than the market.
Yeah. I'm halfway in on him. I don't think he deserves to be a first rounder. I think he's more of a second rounder. He was productive at junior college, which I think people kind of like forget that. So like they look at just 2 years of production, you know, in the FCS and they think, eh, that's not really all that great. But, you know, he was a standout player before he got to, was at Arizona State.
Yeah. All right. T. Higgins, Clemson.
Love him. I like him much more than a lot of people do. I think he should be a first rounder. It wouldn't surprise me if he actually ended up being the best receiver in this class.
That would surprise me. It would surprise me if he was significantly better than Lamb or Judy, I think. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I like barely think he's a prospect, but he is like on like consensus big board stuff, he's top 100.
It's just because he was a five-star recruit entering college, but he didn't do anything at Michigan to show that he deserves it. I don't want to get Devin Funchist, and that's what this guy is.
Yeah. Okay. Bryan Edwards.
No.
Not interested. Van Jefferson.
No, not at all.
Courtney Davis.
No.
Michael Pittman Jr.
100%. He's
a late declare though. How can you be in? He's old. He's a late declare. What are you doing?
He's just the big bodied guy who's an athletic freak. Like, I like those guys.
All right. Well, you know who's a big bodied guy and an athletic freak and the best one in this class? Chase Claypool from Notre Dame.
100%.
Chase Claypool is going to win people fantasy football leagues at some point in his career. That dude is the best. I am so in on Chase Claypool.
Vincent Jackson. Like those guys, big body guys who are athletic freaks. And I don't care if they don't come on to like their final season, whatever it is. I'm always in on those guys. It's those guys are my fatal flaw.
Yeah, well, they're not my fatal flaw because we're going to keep winning. We're going to keep winning on these dudes. All right, everyone, thank you very much for joining us here on the Daily Roto Hour or on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, depending on which way you are enjoying this content. Of course, thank you to our buddy, Matt Friedman from the Action Network, for coming on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at MattFTheOracle, a Twitter handle that he loves and in no way regrets at all. You can follow me on Twitter at Davis Matic. You can check out my podcast on iTunes if you just search TakeCast or my name. And we will be back tomorrow with more COVID-19 content for you guys.